This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. His job is to help police officers deal with the stress and mental issues they face in their jobs and keep them on track so they don't make misjudgments in the field. Later in the show, we'll have a conversation with Dr. James Dom, who works as the psychologist for the Cincinnati Police Department. But first... Sorry, we couldn't resist. For three decades, Xavier University's sister Roseanne Fleming has been a force behind the school's extraordinary academic record for its men's basketball players. And since she started Xavier's academic advising program, every player who reached his final year of eligibility has graduated. A new book, Out of Habit, My Life as Xavier University's Unlikely Point Guard, tells the story of the woman behind this impressive academic success of the Xavier men's basketball team. It's written by Laura Pulfer, former Cincinnati Enquirer columnist and NPR commentator. All the proceeds will benefit the Sister Roseanne Fleming Academic Success Endowment. And Sister Roseanne and Laura Pulfer join us this afternoon to look at this wonderful story. And thanks, both of you, for being here.
Glad to be here. Mark. Thank you.
And Laura, I have to know, who came up with the title for the book?
I probably did. You know, Sister was talking about one day she walked by Matt Stainbrook, who's a wonderful player who plays for Xavier this year, I think. And she said that he'd hurt his knee, and she reached down and kind of out of habit, she made a cross on his knee. And I thought, out of habit. Out of habit. There are so many levels that, you know, she's out of her religious habit, and then she has the habit of learning, and I don't know, just seemed to fit.
You can join our conversation today, 513-419-7100. You can email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Sister Roseanne, what was the early part of your life like, and how did that shape the roles that you play in the future?
Well, Mark, I've had a long life by this time. Early on, I went to Summit Country Day School. I started there in kindergarten with my twin brother, Tom. I went through 13 years at Summit Country Day. My brother left after 8 because there was no separate school for boys at that time. So he went on to St. X High School. But from the Summit, 13 years with the Sisters of Notre Dame, I really began to admire what they were doing, their teaching, their ministry, their mission, and their missionary activities. And so when I was a senior in high school, I talked to my father about entering with the Sisters of Notre Dame, and he said, "Oh, you're too young. You haven't seen life yet. You have to go to college first." And my mother had died when my brother and I were young. So Dad said, "You know, I promised your mother I'd make sure that you and your brother went to college." And he said, I want to keep that promise." So he went around with me and looked at some schools and decided that a friend of his had sent his daughters to Mount St. Joe, and he thought they did a good job. So he said, "You're going to go to Mount St. Joseph." So that was the college counseling that I went through in those days. I had a very wonderful education at Mount St. Joseph, and then at the end of that, I was 21 and talked to my father, and he said, "If you want to still do that, you can go ahead." So that was the early part of my life. I entered with the Sisters of Notre Dame in 1954 and got a mission over to back to Summit Country Day after 6 years of teaching at Mount Notre Dame Academy. After spending another 15 years at Summit, 8 of which was as head of the school, I went on to Trinity College as president. Trinity's in Washington, D.C., is now known as Trinity University. After my time at Trinity, I came back, and the day I got back at Cincinnati, it was 1982. I think it was early August. I got a phone call from a Jesuit who said, his name was Charlie Curry. He said, "Sister, what are you going to do?" And I said, "Well, I'm going to unpack my bags." And he said, "Well, I mean, what are you going to do then?" And I said, "Well, I don't know. I'd like to teach, and I'd like to go to law school and get a dual degree in business." And he said, "Don't get a dual degree. Come over to Xavier and get your master's of business administration at Xavier." He said, "We got a really good degree, and I'm going to be president there." So he said, "Will you let me have my assistant call you tomorrow and set up an appointment?" So I said, "Sure." So day or two later, I was over at Xavier, and I got a job teaching English, both composition and literature. And so that's how I happened to run across some athletes in my class. And during the time that I was teaching there. I had very, very bright athletes, swimming, volleyball, all kinds of different sports, men's soccer, I remember, and men's basketball. And I was so impressed. Every week I got a call from their coaches asking me how they were doing. And so I would give very good reports on most of them. But I had one interesting student that really enticed me. I'll call him Donnie for the purposes of the book, out of habit and in this program. And Donnie used to ask me almost every day that I hit him for class, can I go out and get a drink of water? And I knew the water fountain was right outside the door, so I'd say, sure, Donnie. But he was gone. He would leave about 10 minutes after class started, and he'd be gone for another hour or so and come back right at the end of class.
Long drink of water.
And so when his coach called, I said, can you send a bottle of water with him? He must be dehydrated from all you're doing. So the coach said, what? And I said, no, I said, can you send a bottle of water with him? He takes these long trips out of my class, and he's missing a lot. And the coach said, well, that'll stop. And that did stop. So that's how I got into this.
Well, you see that as something that's really needed for college athletes, don't you, this academic guidance and advising that you're doing?
Absolutely, yes.
Yeah. Why did you create that academic advising program?
Well, the reason I created the program is Jeff Folgerson, who was athletic director at the time, came up to see me one day and he said, you know, I'm really, really concerned about the future of athletics. I want to maintain high-end academic integrity at Xavier as well as I did at Georgetown. He had been at Georgetown as involved with student life up there. And he said, I want to make sure that there is some oversight outside of the athletic department. And he said, I think you've been good with our coaches, giving them feedback every week. I think you'd be good at doing this. Would you consider it? And I said, well, I'd have to call my superior and get permission to do it, but let me think about it overnight. So the more I thought about it that day, the more I thought, here's a group that I could really serve. They're a group who's life is really dedicated to developing their skills and making Xavier look good out in the public and making us well-known and competing at least twice a week during the season for us. They need help. And I thought, I'm going to make sure that they get a degree. I don't want to just use players that come here. I think they're doing a lot for us, and I want to make sure when they leave, they have a degree and they know how to serve others. They know how to make a good life for themselves and for their family. And so that's what I really want to do. And so I called my superior and she said, well, just if you think that's a good thing to do, go ahead and say yes. So the next day I met with Jeff and the academic vice president and said yes. And that's kind of the beginning of the program. I saw a great need for study halls to build a structure around their lives to make sure that they had time to get their mind back to the books before the next day. So we created a study hall from Sunday through Thursday, gave them 10 hours a week. And, you know, I told them while they were grumbling about it, I said, that's not enough, but, you know, use it as well as you can. And then created a structure on the, when they traveled so that they would have time to study in the hotel. They wished I didn't come along most of the time with them, but that's what we did. We created a structure. We got tutors for them. So when they missed classes, we had designated students that would take notes and go over those notes and make sure that we could keep up. Today with email, it's a lot simpler to have somebody send the notes right after class. They can review them on the way back and kind of keep a part of their lives for study and for success in the academic area.
Laura, how did you get involved in writing the book?
I was happily sitting on the edge of the lake where I live, dangling my feet in the water, and I got a call from Xavier, and they talked a little bit about Sister Roseanne, and who wouldn't want to help her tell her story? I mean, it's just, it is such a wonderful story. And she's skimmed over a lot of the, like when she's at Summit as a child, she doesn't tell about a little rebellion where she almost got thrown out of school. Now, we'll leave that for people who read the book. But, then, you know, she's skimmed over a few things.
And it wasn't exactly an easy early life either with losing your mother and the things that you went through.
Well, I had a very good aunt. It was my father. She was single. It was my father's only sister. And she came out to take care of my brother and myself, help my father raise us. So it made it a lot better than it would have been otherwise.
And the point that she made early on is that a lot of people would think that she was so different from these young men that she was helping. And all along the way, I could see lessons that she learned that she brought to bear on these kids, that she always would look for the key. What will be the thing that will get this young man to listen to what I have to tell him? And it was kind of amazing how she tricked them into learning sometimes.
Laura, one of the things that, that really struck me about the book is when you look at the index, it's lots and lots of names of people. You get the sense that that's what's important to you. Sister Roseanne is people, not things, people. And it's an incredible story. And you had to talk to a lot of those people, didn't you?
I did. And it was never, ever because Sister Roseanne couldn't remember something. She has such an incredible memory for details. But it was talking to people, catching up on what they're doing now. You know, what's David West doing now? What's Brian Grant doing now? What are some of the people who are playing ball in Europe, you know, catching up on their lives? But never, ever was there a time when I thought, oh, Sister probably doesn't remember. She remembers everything.
Of course. Did anything come as a surprise to you when you were writing the book?
Did anything come
as a surprise?
You know, I guess the thing that really surprised me so much is how brilliant she is, because people say, oh, she's so persistent. And that made me think, you know, maybe she was just lying in wait to ambush them as they came out of their apartments and drag them off to class. But the thing is, she thought of ways to teach them that were so, like, there was this one young man who was real, real, real bright, but he couldn't wrap his head around fractions. And she worked on the Montessori program at Summit when she was there and expanded that. And you know how the Montessori kids have blocks and things and they use shapes. And she kept picturing those blocks. If the guy could think of the parts of a whole, but she knew how humiliating it would be for him if she showed up with kids building blocks. So she went out and she bought 4 6 packs of Pop and then showed him, you know, how many parts of the whole those were. And then he learned fractions and they drank the Pop.
After the break, we'll be talking more with Sister Roseanne Fleming and Laura Palfer. And then later in the show, we'll look at the work of a police psychologist. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. During her three decades of work with Xavier University, not only has the men's basketball team built a reputation for its success on the court, it's also built a reputation for solid academics. My guests this afternoon are Sister Roseanne Fleming, who started the academic advising program, and also author Laura Palfer, who's written a book about Sister's remarkable life, Out of Habit, My Life as Xavier University's Unlikely Point Guard. And you can join the conversation at 513-419-7100. You can email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Sister Roseanne, what's a typical day like for you? It starts pretty early, doesn't it?
I get up at 4, usually.
Oh.
That's a.m., Mark.
4 a.m. Wow. And what happens after that?
Well, I spend some time in prayer, about an hour in prayer, and then I have an exercise routine, which I do usually between 5 and 6 o'clock. And at 6, I start to get dressed, have breakfast at 7, and then go to church. We have a mass on campus at 8 o'clock in the morning in Bellarmine Chapel. So I try to make that first part of my day. At 8:30, I go to the office, and then that becomes the beginning of the day for me in terms of the academic work. Currently, I'm special assistant to the president, so I spend about 50% of my time overseeing the academic advising program, and then another 25% of my time on faculty athletic representative work, and the last part of the time I spend on development.
And does any of your work involve knocking on doors, tracking down students, reminding them that they need to?
Used to, didn't it?
It used to. Not anymore. No, I sometimes go visit with advisors, but I don't knock on doors of students anymore.
Well, you know, part of her morning routine is she runs. And I always used to think those poor guys trying to dodge her, she can run like a deer.
Yeah. Well, yeah, you have to keep your strength and your energy up, don't you, to keep up with these students?
Well, really,
students.
You do. I mean, that has become very important to me over the years, to have some time every day to do exercise.
513-419-7100 if you'd like to join the conversation. And let's talk with Sean in downtown. Good afternoon, Sean. You're on Cincinnati Edition.
Hi, thank you. Sister Roseanne, I've always admired the work that you do, and I've admired Xavier University for recognizing that that work's important and allowing you to do that work. I have a question on so students who don't make it through, who don't get through the system, and I know you deal specifically with basketball, but really kind of through all the athletics. Yeah. Is there ever any effort to reach back out and like look at potential for, you know, what they call like reverse degrees? You know, hey, you've reached this many credits. We know you've been away from us for a bit, but could you come back in to XU and you could finish this degree because you have this many credits? Is there anything done like that?
I don't have anything specific that we've done yet, Mark, but let me just pick up your question and enlarge it a little bit. For 25 years, I took care of every team. So I have a good idea of all 18 teams and what they need. And I might say that each team has its own unique atmosphere about it and their love of learning, and I've appreciated working with all the sports. Specifically, I found a great need for my time with men and women's basketball, and I don't know that we have lost too many players that have dropped out for academic reasons. What we've tried to do is build a program that gives the opportunity to every student there to pick the major of his or her choice and to spend time within that major and with our department chairs and with the faculty so that they can get the finest education possible while they're also serving us by giving time to their sport and traveling and making Xavier known through their sport.
Sean, I remember listening to Sister about a fellow named Eddie Johnson who got sick and his strength was so low he really couldn't play ball anymore, and he left and he went to join the service, and he called her from the battlefield. He was in the Gulf and she could hear explosions, and I talked to him just recently. He's a police officer in Maryland, and he said that he called his mother and said, "You call Sister Roseanne, she'll help you get back in school." And she did. And when he came back, she bombed him with every kind of tutor he needed and her attention. And I just can't imagine a time when one of these guys would call Sister and not get the help they needed. I mean, I heard that specific story.
Sean, thank you for the call. We appreciate it. Sister Roseanne, tell me about some of the players you've worked with over the years.
Outstanding in my memory is early memory is Tyrone Hill and Derek Strong. They're the famous Twin Towers that put us on the map pretty much during the Pete Kellen years, with a lot of support from many other players. But when Tyrone came, it was a very, very interesting experience for me. It was early on. I think he came about 1987 or so. And Tyrone had been recruited heavily by Coach Gillen, and we were all told, you know, he showed such great potential when he was over at Withrow. So when Tyrone sat down opposite me, he didn't show immediate interest in all that I had to say in terms of classes that he was going to attend, but understood that to play basketball or to play any sport there, that you had to go to school, and that was all part of Xavier's way. And it was also a requirement by the NCAA. So Tyrone and I started our relationship by his needing to accept what I had to say regarding a program. And I was very interested in trying to find out what Tyrone would like to do with his life and try to fashion an academic program that would enhance his opportunities. And so, you know, we met almost on a weekly basis, if not a daily basis, to begin with, to get him into the routine of going to school and actually participating in class, doing the work. And I spent time, my own time, just walking through the process with him. One time he was a little late in handing in his paper, a paper that had to be done. I believe it was in philosophy class. And the assignment was to make sure they touched primary sources. And that hadn't been done yet. So I told him one day, I said, we're going to spend the time for advising walking with me over to the library. And so we took that trip to the library. He didn't want to go, but he did. And I tried to pretend I wasn't listening to what he was saying.
Bad words, actually.
on our way over there to the library. And I took him straight to the librarian. And I said, told the librarian what the assignment was. And I said, Tyrone wants to do it and he needs some help. She took care of that. She took him all around, introduced him to what meant to touch primary sources, got him they picked out a topic that was approved on the paper I had, and worked on it from there. And that story was a success. So he started to build on successes.
Did you know, Mark, that she lives on campus and lived mm-hmm. in an apartment complex where a lot of the guys lived? And Tyrone was very worried when he and his friends were moving into this complex. They were afraid that their music would be a little bit loud. And so he told Sister Baby she might want to move. And she told him that if he didn't play his music too loud, she would try not to pray too loud. That they could
problem. As sister, I hear that David West is somebody who stays in touch with you. In fact, I think when he was in town last month for an NBA preseason game, he reached out to you.
He did. Yeah. I had the opportunity that evening to talk to both James Posey, who's a coach for the Cavaliers now, and to David. I talked to James Posey just before the halftime break. And then David came up after the game and said, hey, sisters, is there someplace we can go and talk? And we talked for maybe 20 minutes or half hour of that night. So I like to see the players when they come down to campus. They usually call me or come over, or they call me and I go over to CentOS Center and visit with them. So over the years, we've had a lot of good exchanges.
You've obviously had an impact on their lives. So how have the student athletes you work with had an impact on your life?
Oh, very much so. I've learned that these students that we recruit are really very, very good at their skill. Let's talk about skill in basketball at this point. And I've learned to respect them tremendously. They have gifts from God that they feel a real calling to develop. And I think as part of that development, I want to make sure that they understand all their gifts from God. They have wonderful athletic talent, but they also have a mind, they have a heart, they have all the potential to be educated and to develop into really great human beings. And that's what I've been so pleased to have an opportunity to help with.
Yeah, in the book you say that one of the things that's a big part of your DNA is that education is the key to survival. Is that the key attitude that you're trying to pass along to these student athletes?
Absolutely. I think education is really a stepping stone to a better life in many, many ways. I think, too, the value system, which they hopefully get at Xavier, gives them an opportunity to live life in a different way from the way they might have chosen to live it. They can't leave Xavier without having heard for over a four-year period about finding God in all things in their life, particularly when things are tough, understanding that he's there, that he loves us, that he's there to support us. He's there to turn to for direction. I think, too, that they also learn the value of service to others, what that means. And when they have the opportunity, they can make other people's lives better, as their life became better as a result of graduating from Xavier.
What's the toughest part of your job?
I think the toughest part of the job is to wait for them to make good choices. You know, you offer ideas to them sometimes, but everybody's free, and you have to stand back and sometimes let them find out from their own experiences what works and what doesn't work, even though you can see it coming. But it's that whole process of growth. Waiting for it is sometimes very hard for me, but it's something you have to do.
And what gives you the most satisfaction?
Seeing them succeed. Seeing them, I think people have asked me what the happiest day of my year is, and it's always graduation day, seeing them get their degree, because they've earned it. It's nothing that I have done. It's a little bit of suggestion, but they've worked with our faculty, and they've earned that degree by working hard when they're also playing hard. And I think what I've been able to see is the combination of the two work at Xavier.
Now, Coach Pete Gillen named you the team's MVP in 1990, and then in 2000, you were inducted into Xavier's Athletic Hall of Fame. On Monday, you're going to have your number, so to speak, raised into the rafters at the Cintas Center, and you even have your own bobblehead coming. So how does all that make you feel?
Well, I feel very blessed for having been at Xavier, I've enjoyed every minute that I've been there. I feel it's been a privilege to work with these young men and women. And this is just icing on the cake.
Well, Sister Roseanne and Laura, thank you very much for joining me this afternoon. Xavier University Sister Roseanne Fleming and author Laura Pulfer. The book is called Out of Habit, My Life as Xavier University's Unlikely Point Guard. Proceeds from the book will benefit the Sister Roseanne Fleming Academic Success Endowment. And on Monday, Sister will participate in her first book signing prior to the Xavier-Murray State game at 7 o'clock at Cintas Center. And the first 3,000 fans will receive a commemorative Sister Roseanne Fleming bobblehead. And then, as we were talking about, her number is going to be retired at halftime. After the break, we'll explore the crucial work of a police psychologist. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU.